So, welcome everybody to today's meditation class. There is two meditation classes, occurs every Saturday afternoon. The series of four talks on the introduction to meditation, the beginner's class, where people who haven't meditated before can learn the basics of meditation. That class is being held in the room to my right. So this is the ongoing class. So those who come to the beginning meditation class, it's the room to my right here. Just go outside the door there, and the first door is where that class is. Because those of you who haven't done meditation before, this is a bit of a harsh introduction where we talk about deeper stuff and also sit for much longer. So it may be a bit too much for a person. So anyway, for those who are here, every Saturday afternoon we talk about something about meditation. Somebody was asking if we had any books, this is from Malaysia, on what they call in meditation the five hindrances. So I don't know if we have any total books on the five hindrances. We have some talks on them, lengthy talks which are online from the meditation retreats. But basically these are things which are ways of looking at what stops you getting peaceful in meditation and which stops you seeing things clearly. And the first two of those are probably the biggest. That is the wanting and ill will aversion. What that really means is we don't actually see what we want to see. We don't see what's there. We see what we want to see, and we refuse to see things which aren't nice to us. Or maybe if there's any people coming to the introduction class, the introduction beginners class is in the room to my right over there. This is the ongoing class. Maybe Lynn is outside, seeing, make sure that people who are coming on the introductory class. Because this is a lengthy class, a deeper class. Okay, hopefully that everybody knows what they're doing. And it's also, if you're not used to sitting for 45 minutes, sometimes you disturb other people who are getting to deep meditation. But anyway, basically it is called wanting. You know, the wanting or not wanting, whatever's happening there. And that becomes something which disturbs the meditation. Long time ago, when I was under my teacher in Thailand, he would often hold up his hand, he'd wave it up, if I'm finally state. Well, we'd say these days it's default state. The leaves outside, I can look, it's a windy afternoon, so they are moving all over the place. But if it's a calm day, they would stop moving. Same with your mind. Your mind, its natural state is to be still and peaceful. It only moves because something is making it move. What makes it move is wanting something, which includes, you know, wanting something to disappear, wanting something to go, which is called the negativity. So those are the main obstacles, the main hindrances to deep meditation, to any meditation. When you want something, you're creating business, something to do, somewhere to get. And when we don't want anything, then we find that the mind becomes still all by itself. It takes time, because one of the other more refined parts of wanting is impatience. And many, many people, they like quick results. These days, if you want to watch a movie, you can just download it online really quickly. You don't even need to go to the movie theater. You know, you just do it at home. So simple. Music, the same. So people have got the idea that meditation they want really fast. But of course, it takes time. You can imagine that your car, if you came here on a car, as soon as you park, you turn the engine off, it doesn't go cold straight away. It takes a while for things to cool down. And that's the same with the mind. It takes a while for your mind to cool down and become still. So you have to give it that time. Now, wanting, not wanting, first two hindrances. If you have been doing a lot of wanting and not wanting, the residue of that is that you are tired. So sometimes we sit down and if we get still we go to sleep or half asleep. And that's just the case that you've been using your brain too much. And if you fight that brain and say, no, I'm going to be awake, you know, you use all your willpower, all you're doing is using more energy, tiring yourself more, stressing yourself out, which means it doesn't really solve the problem. So, we just let sleepiness be. As best we can, we don't fight it. If you fight it, it lasts longer, it makes it worse. Let it be wanting or not wanting. And you find the mind. Restlessness is just you have been agitated, and if you try, you just put restlessness, which I give, which you may many times. I hold up this water perfectly still. Reason why this pain, I'm really trying to hold it still. Is it becoming still? No, it's moving. So because I'm not focusing properly, I'm now mindful and focused, I'm really putting a lot of effort into holding this water still, and when I try very hard it moves actually more. It's so frustrating trying to keep a glass of water perfectly still like this. It's the wrong method. So instead of trying to hold it still, so easy to keep a glass of water perfectly still, you just put it down. Let it go. Leave it alone. And then you find the water becomes, there it is, perfectly still. So easy to do. That's how we overcome restlessness. We put it down, we let it go. And very often I've taught that how you actually let go of the restlessness of the mind, first of all, don't try and stop it. Number two, don't encourage it. Stand back from it. Sometimes I say, just imagine you're watching all this thoughts, this restlessness from maybe a distance, 2 or 3 feet away. You can imagine you're watching it on a screen, but you're not in the screen, you are watching the screen from a distance. That means you don't get entangled in it. When you get entangled in the movie, when you get entangled in your thoughts, you actually drive them. You keep them going. Your emotional investment in those thoughts, sometimes negative emotions, sometimes positive emotions, those emotional entanglement, investment, sorry, in those thoughts, keeps them going. When you take your emotional involvement out, they're just thoughts. You find just how stupid they are, and then you find you can let them go very easily. If you're watching a movie at home, you watch it, if you just stand back and just see how absolutely stupid it is, then you find it doesn't entangle you and you turn it off. A soccer match, a cricket match, look, you know, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. You're just asking for trouble because you can't win every match, which means you'd always be suffering. It's much better not to have any suffering at all by not getting involved. It was one of the reasons I became a monk. I supported this hopeless soccer team in London, and they kept on losing and losing and losing. And I realized that this is just driving me crazy. So becoming a monk and not having anything to do with soccer, oh, so much freedom, so much happiness, so much peace. So not getting involved was much better. But I was emotionally involved in it. So this way, when we can step back from these things, then we can actually become still all by itself. That's how we overcome just those first four hindrances. We don't want anything. Things come up, we let them be, so we don't have any ill will. We just allow restlessness just to disappear with a bit of patience, not interfering with it. Sleepiness, it disappears as well. And so we're left with the last one, which is doubt. Which is, we always want to know the meaning of things, but we try and find that meaning through thinking, trying to work it out, trying to philosophize, trying to find a rational meaning behind things, when we haven't yet got enough data, enough experience, to really understand what's going on. So So we overcome what they call the fifth hindrance by just not thinking about stuff, just being, just quiet, gathering enough data, enough experience of what peace actually is, of what makes meditation work. And after gathering enough data, soon it's so obvious that much of our problems are because we fight the world, that we expect things which the world can never give us, that when we want something more, we can never have any peace, we can never enjoy what we already have. Little things like that become so obvious to us. And also we understand that how on earth can we make peace by making war with our mind and with our body. So these are insights which come naturally. The similar I often give, your mind is like a big lake in the mountains. When there is the winds of wanting or not wanting, that lake has so many waves on the surface, whipped up by the winds of wanting. And if you look into that lake, you cannot see the reflection of the moon and stars above. But if the lake is perfectly still, because you don't want anything, nor do you not want things, the wanting, the wind of wanting has disappeared, the lake becomes like a glass mirror, which sees, has a beautiful reflection of the moon and the stars. And actually, that wasn't the Buddha's simile. The Buddha's simile was almost even better. He said, when the water is so still, because there's no waves on the surface, not wanting, you can look and see all the fish and all the other animals which live in that water. You can see right down to the very bottom, to the stones and the gravel and the little plants on the bottom of the lake, if it is perfectly still. Because also when the water is still, all of the mud, the dirt or whatever, all settles down to the bottom and it does become clear. But if there's any movement in that lake, any wanting, you look into that lake and you can't understand what's in there. And that simile of the Buddha, that's understanding the nature of your mind. If it's agitated, wanting something, you look inside of it, you can't see very much, it's murky. When it's settled down and still, then you can see all the amazing things which live and swim in your mind and which crawl and slither along its bottom. Interesting stuff. So those are the five hindrances in brief. All coming down to a basic hindrance of wanting something. Craving, desire, wanting. So that's five hindrances. And that's for someone over in, where was it? Over in Malaysia, who wanted, you know, to actually have some sort of deeper understanding of the five hindrances. So once those five hindrances have been dealt with, then there's nothing between you and stillness and the deepest of insights. Da da da. Okay, so there we go. Now we can do some meditation. And in the meantime, I have to say again, is anybody here for the first time? If what I just said made absolutely no sense at all because you've just, you know, come for the first time, then please go to next door. Great teacher next door to guide you through the initial stages of meditation. If you always go through the initial stages, then people who've been here for a while just get a bit bored. They've heard it before. So always try and add a bit more depth in this class. So we're going to do a 45-minute meditation until 4 o'clock. So, if you would close your eyes. Uh-oh, you're locked in, you were warned. No, you can't get out. Very good. Closing your eyes. And I usually leave the first 15 minutes or so. And then I like to just disappear as well. Start with your body awareness. Your eyes closed. How are your legs? Are they comfortable? So you deliberately focus your awareness, your mindfulness, to your legs. Checking them out. making sure that they're in a position where they're not going to cause you disturbance throughout the meditation. And then you check your bottom. It's going to carry your weight for the next 45 minutes. I've got to adjust my cushion, it's not in the proper place. Once you've adjusted your bottom, feel it, the cushion's nicely under my butt. There's no folds of clothing digging into you. And then you move up your back, or move up to your back, I should have said. Just checking out that it's comfortable. People do have aches and pains in their backs because they're not aware, not mindful of their posture. You check it out. Once the back is relaxed, your hands and arms, where are they? This also stops you just wandering off into thoughts. You've got a job to do first. Be aware of your body. How do your arms feel? Do they need to be adjusted? And then go to your shoulders. Relax your shoulders. Sometimes people say, how? You be aware first of all. Aware of the muscles, the feelings in your shoulders. Once you are aware, then just try to relax them. Trial and error, you usually find out what actually relaxes those muscles. And you'd be surprised to know, or maybe not so surprised, that when you relax those muscles, that is called letting go. Letting be, kindness. That's what it means. Then you check your head, balance on top of the neck, making sure that's not too far forward, not too far back. And lastly, muscles around the eyes, where emotions are displayed for others to see, mostly around the eyes. Relax them. And then you can be aware of your whole body, relaxed, ready to meditate. Actually, this is part of meditation. And I always include the next step, the deep relaxation of your parts of your body which the hands cannot touch, which you cannot alleviate through movement. What part of your body is irritating, which is not at peace, which is maybe even painful? You zoom in on that part of your body. Focus on it. So you fill your mind just with a tiny area of your body, feeling it. And once you are aware of those sensations, unpleasant sensations, then by trial and error, you'll learn how to relax those feelings. What makes it better? What makes it worse? Your mind is now interfacing with your body. And little by little you learn how to relax your body deep inside. And once this relaxed and at ease, take one last look at your body. And then you go to the world of your mind. How peaceful are you right now? I don't mean physically comfortable, but emotionally still. Or how agitated are you? Imagining your mind like the lake. Are there waves on the surface? Is it choppy, as they say? or are there just a few ripples? Those waves, those ripples represent your thoughts. When the lake is calm, when there's no wind, the waves get less and less and less. No wanting, just being here. Another way of looking at this is no past, no future. When all of your past you allow to let go for a while, when you don't concern yourself about the future but just about the present, there is no space for wanting to happen. Wanting needs something in the past or the future to crave for. So just come into this moment, the place of freedom. Right now, it's here, it's arrived. All wanting will not change this. So we let things be right now. Usually, after a while, you become aware of your breathing. Just follow your breath as far as it will take you. When you get really calm, the breath vanishes. You get this wonderful light. So just be in this moment. Don't want things. That stops the meditation. Just be here, calm, free, having put down your glass. I will now be quiet until 1 minute before the meditation ends. hour close to the end of the meditation. How do you feel? How peaceful is the mind? Gong 3 times to end the meditation. So now we have some questions. Okay. So the first question is from Penang and from Santa Barbara. What are the best times in the day for good meditation? What is the rationale for meditation to be held during the wee hours of the morning? There's no best time in the day for meditation. When somebody asks what's the best time for meditation, what's the worst time for meditation, I always used to say now is the best time for meditation, later on is the worst time for meditation. So there's nothing special about the wee hours, nothing special about the afternoon or evening. So you just have to work it into your schedule or work your schedule around the meditation. When you feel it's a nice time to meditate, that's when you meditate. So there's no special time at all. And from Austria, can meditation help children for better concentration and learning in school? When is the proper age for children to start learning meditation? Now they teach meditation in schools under the synonym of mindfulness, and they've been teaching meditation, which is not the same as I teach meditation here. You have to have meditation teachings appropriate to the age and experience of people. So you don't teach children how to focus on limiters, and you don't even teach them to focus on their breath. These young children usually found that teaching children to visualize and have some visualizations, which makes people very peaceful and still, seems to work the best. So basically it's up to the particular teacher to improvise. There is much advice online how to meditate with children, books written about how to meditate with children, and it does actually assist with better learning in school. I always like to quote one of the disciples from the Imamadel group about 30 years ago, Kerry. She taught in Roldy Stone Primary School, grade 6. And this was 30 years ago, before meditation was popular in schools. And because they couldn't call it meditation or even mindfulness, the word wasn't recognized at all. So she just called it quiet time. And she came along to the Armada meditation group regularly, and so that's where she learned her meditation. And so every morning, she got grade 6 at the start of the school year, and taught them 5-minute meditation at the very beginning of every school day, and built it up to 15 minutes by the end of the year. So they had all these kids, grade 6s, doing their meditation, and being in Roldy Stone, it's quite an affluent southern suburb of Perth. And they had many Christians there who started to wonder, what is my kid doing? And the principal was quite a devout Christian, and he told me, because I went in there, he was really impressed. He said, I'm not a Buddhist. I know that meditation is Buddhism, but I've seen the effects on the children. It works. And so he told me, I don't care what religion it is, if it works, I'm going to support it. And I argue with some of these very staunch Christians, nothing to do with religion. We're not converting your kids. We're just making them smarter, because I've seen the results. And he was so impressed that he would support this teacher all the way until she eventually retired. And she told me just some of the unexpected results, not just academic achievement, but there was this amazing social cohesion in the class. Everyone became more sensitive, more compassionate to one another. And that was just unexpected. When they became peaceful and calm, they became, you know, more caring. Kid had an argument with his mother last night or something. And they feel that, and they go up and give them some solace, some sort of comfort. And that was unexpected, how this simple peacefulness made, what would it be, 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds, much more emotionally sensitive to one another. And also, whenever there was boys and girls in the class, whenever there was an argument in the class, whenever the kids started to get upset at one another, one of the kids would always put their hand up, could be a boy, could be a girl, "Miss, can we have quiet time now?" And they suggested it. So everyone would stop what they were doing, close their eyes, do the quiet time, meditation, and after 5 minutes, the disturbance would be gone. And they said it was amazing how it created harmony in the classroom. So that's what they were doing 30 years ago in Rolleystone here in Perth. A great, great, great system. So grade 6, it worked really well. So of course, younger kids, you can do that, but you've got to adapt the meditation accordingly. And lastly, from Malaysia, how do we manage our emotions when facing stress and criticism in our lives, such as workplace? How can meditation help? Just like it helped the children in the class when they have stress, when they have criticism, when you learn how to meditate, you're learning how to let go. Let go of the past in particular. So when they criticize you, they only criticize you once. And you forget about it straight away. Instead of the person who's called, "You are stupid." And you start thinking, "Why did a monk call me stupid when he was looking at me? I'm not stupid. This is unfair. I'm not stupid." And then I've just called you stupid 3 more times. Every time you remember that. Because this is actually Tom from Malaysia. So that's Thomas over there. He knows me. I'm not calling him stupid. But people, they keep obsessing about it. That is the stress. It's not someone calling you stupid, someone calling you an idiot, someone calling you fat. It's what you do afterwards that causes the stress. And in meditation, we learn how to let it go straight away. And stress and criticism, when the only reason why people, this is another thing, that why do you bother when people call you stupid? The only thing is because it's a part of you believes they may be right. That's why you get upset. If you knew for certain you're not stupid, then of course you wouldn't be upset. So when you meditate, you learn exactly how your mind works. It's not stupid, it's not intelligent, it's just the mind, that's all. Sometimes it's really intelligent, sometimes it does the most stupid things in the world. So which one is the right you? So that means meditation helps. I'll finish off with one of my favourite stories. This is actually a Sufi story about this teacher who was led a meditation retreat, and after his meditation retreat, he decided to give a nice surprise for all the students. He took them to a fair in the local town. So all these holy people, they went to the fair, and one of the stalls in the fair was you can buy 3 arrows, and if your arrow got a bullseye, you would get a teddy bear as a prize, or something like that. So this teacher said, "Oh, I'll take 3 arrows, please." And then his students say, "We never knew you were an archer." And he said, "That doesn't matter about that." And so he put the first arrow in the bow, aimed for the target, shot it, and it fell halfway between where he was standing and the target. It didn't even have enough power to reach the target, let alone hit it. And all of the students say, "Get away quickly, you don't know what you're doing." And the teacher said, "That was the shot of a hasty man." And so he put another arrow in the bow and took more time this time. And he pulled it much further back and it shot it. It made the distance, but it went about 10 yards to the left, almost killed somebody. And then he said, "That was the shot of a proud man." And all the students were getting really, really embarrassed. That was their teacher they respected. He was making a fool of himself. And he put the third arrow in the bow, pulled it back and shot the arrow. And of course, it hit the bullseye. And as he got his prize, a little teddy bear, his students, feeling relief that they weren't going to be so embarrassed, they said, "Well, if the first shot was the shot of a hasty man, and the second shot was a shot of a proud man, who was the third shot by?" He said, "Oh, that was me." In other words, which one is the right you? You can choose whichever one you want. And if you're smart, choose the one which is the good one, the smart one. That's how you imagine emotion when you get criticism. You just said, "Oh, I wasn't in my right mind." Well, it sounded like a good idea at the time. That's a classic one. "Not my fault." That's another one. But don't take criticism personally. And when meditation, you also realize there's nobody in here, so who are you criticizing? So really, you haven't got a target at all. No one in here. So the arrow goes right through and hits nothing. You cannot be criticized. So that's how you imagine you manage your emotion. You don't take criticism or stress and keep it. You let it go. And that's how what you learn in meditation, how to let go. Okay, anyway, that's from the overseas. Any questions here? Great. Okay, so now we can go. I'm only going to have about 10 minutes to answer any questions personally because there's unfortunately a young boy who's dying. I'm going to visit him in the hospital. They're going to pick me up at 4:30. So only really, 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 really important stuff.